Mother Man.
Hey, everybody out there. This is Paul Bates, an X-ray-tician extraordinaire, and you're listening to Murder Metal Man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! What's up, guys?
What the fuck's happening, y'all?
Fuck yeah. Doing that Tuesday thing. Doing some Murder Metal Mayhem. That's what I know. Hell yeah, man. Porntie Studios is a good place to be, is it not?
I enjoy it. What do you think, Cash?
Yeah.
Not a bad place at all.
Hell yeah. Episode 116 should be a good one, without a doubt. Keeping with that creepy holiday story for Halloween.
Yeah, I thought we did pretty good this fucking season.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I actually was going to mention to you guys when we're done tonight of an idea I've got for the next October. Nice. That I think would be really cool. Something different.
Sweet.
So I'll share it with you and see what you think. Of course, we had a busy Saturday, guys. A couple of great interviews, man, and a bonus episode.
And four new commercials.
And a partridge in a fucking pear tree.
We
got it done on fucking Saturday, man. That was crazy. You know, all of us work like regular jobs, so to be like here a Saturday, Joey's only day off was out here for 4 hours or so. But, man, we got a lot done, and we're going to talk about that stuff as we go. I got an Armored Saint shirt on tonight.
Fuck yeah.
Getting pumped for the new album. I bought the shirt. I got it yesterday. I was glad because I wanted to support it. Love those guys. They got the new album coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Punch in the Sky on Metal Blade. And so just curious, Chris, what t-shirt are you wearing tonight?
My t-shirt? Oh, I got a Gorgy shirt on that looks like Spike.
Oh, nice. And then you got is that a Goremonger hoodie?
Yeah, Goremonger hoodie.
Nice. And then Joey, what about you? What do you got?
I got the Rompa Prop hoodie on right now.
Okay.
The Dutch Masters of Gore Grind.
Nice.
Fucking right.
Nice. All right. And a Britney Spears t-shirt on.
Yeah,
there,
fuck
right?
Yeah. So lacy, pink, and frilly.
So last week, episode 115 was a good one. The crazy case of the Yuba County Five. I mean, that was one of the most bizarre from 1978 that really left more questions than answers.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that pretty extensively. And Joey, I know you were talking about being excited to do that one because you knew it was going to lend itself
to
good conversation here.
What happened? Nobody knows, and I want to know.
Yeah, and one of us is going to offer up something maybe you didn't think of. I didn't think of that, you know. So a lot of good discussion there. And, of course, CK did the fucking Almighty Slayer, man.
Yeah,
that was
finally.
So badass. Fucking Slayer. And all the bumper music was Slayer, and even Richard Cheese's War Ensemble, which is fucking killer.
Hell yeah.
So, we did do a Killer Cage match, I'm sorry, and Mayhem, and just great one. So episode 115, and we just passed 1,000 listens. I just checked it before it came on, and so thanks, everybody.
Hell yeah, thank you all, man.
Fucking yeah. Hell. Tonight we got another good one, Chris. You suggested this one, another good one from you, Paul Bateson.
When I first read it, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting one because it is definitely on that list of ones you've never heard of before. You know, most people who just hear the name Paul Bateson are not going to know that he was an actor on The Exorcist, first of all.
And one of the scenes that people freaked out about.
Yeah, he was an X-ray technician for real, and the director saw him and the nurse and the doctor and was just like, wow, I want all of you to do this on camera.
You know? It was a certain procedure, though. I can't remember what it
was. Yeah, we'll talk about it for sure. But yeah, like you said, Chris, very controversial scene of The Exorcist. And so, you know, that's what people may know him as, but then to find out that he actually killed a dude and then is suspected in 6 other murders, pretty interesting stuff.
Hell
so New York City in the 70s, definitely a sleazy place, a lot of fucked up shit going on. So we'll talk about a weird curse also that seems to have just taken that set by storm. I mean, a lot of fucked up shit that happened on the Exorcist set, apparently. So we'll talk about that. And so definitely going to fit in perfectly with the spooky Halloween theme of October. So keep it up with the creepy shit. We've definitely been throwing it at you. Now, I found out that CK, you know, he's been getting warmed up different ways. You know, he's been doing jumping jacks. Tonight, he's gone a little over the fucking top. He said he's throwing Chinese stars at kids in the neighborhood.
God damn it, dude. That's against the law, I think.
I know. So CK is all fired up. He's still on a high from Slayer.
I'm not mad at him.
I mean, I think he's still on a high from Slayer, is what I'm guessing. Yeah. Chris, I don't know what
maybe.
Something, but he's going to change it up this time. He's going to talk about Ghost. I'm not a fan of theirs, but there's some of their songs I could listen to, but overall not a big fan. But that's cool because I like to discuss, you know, stuff with him. I don't know.
Hear what he's gonna
and
say
I might
about
not like all the stuff he likes and likewise, but you know, CK is just a very well-rounded metalhead.
Right. For sure.
And so we'll let him speak his piece and throw down and let him, you know, hopefully avoid killing any of those kids with the Chinese stars.
Hopefully, dude. I mean,
God damn.
I have faith in the great metal motherfucker.
Right. He's just going to scare him, right, Joe? Yep. He's not trying
to take
hurt
an eye.
Teach him a lesson.
That's all.
That's right. Killer cage match tonight, guys. Got a very, very interesting one, but we got some listeners to thank, Chris.
Yeah, we got Holly Joe Ziegler. So what's up, Holly? Can't wait to see it. Dan Lance and our good friend Stephanie Reskinoff giving us some numbers.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, guys. We got a funny matchup, though, this week, guys. Yep. Joey, who do we got fighting each other? This is going to be kind of crazy.
We got a Henry Lee Lucas versus Vlad the Impaler.
That's fucking wow. That right there's so one-sided, dude.
I know. I'm hoping that Henry's got some objects he can use and possibly take Vlad the Impaler out.
Maybe even like an important variable this time.
It's very possible. So Henry better get warmed up with CK with the Chinese stars. Get ready for this shit. So, with objects and a variable, we all know anything is possible. And we'll do that matchup, of course, in Mayhem. So, that'll be a lot of fun. Huge thanks, of course, to SpellboundEffectsAndArt.com for sponsoring the show. They've been with us for a while. Did you guys see Tony? Tony Campagna over there at Spellbound Effects and Art is so amazing. He posted a video of this new creation. It's like a
Jack in the Box looking thing, with severed fingers, and like these saws running around, and the head split open, and it's a baby's head
with like big surgical like scissors, as like hands with a baby's head on it.
Think about the head that on the spider legs from the movie Toy Story that comes out from under the fucking bed. Think about that, but more evil and fucking violent.
And dead baby's head.
It's fucking ridiculous.
And it's on like a dice or something where it says kill. Doesn't it spell kill?
Is that
on
what
the
it is?
Dice?
Or maybe it's like one of those wooden
those child blocks. Yeah, exactly. That's probably what it is. But, oh, my God, it's so amazing. SpellboundEffectsAndArt.com. You got to go check that shit out. Tony's on Facebook a lot, so you can see that video there. But
dude, it's amazing. Like, holy shit,
it's amazing. And thanks to all you fuckers listening to Murder Metal Mayhem. We continue to see the numbers rolling in. We're just under 3,000 listens this week, which is still awesome. And definitely want to give a shout out to the listeners. I don't know what's going on in Lake Stevens, Washington. I looked at this place on the map, and there's like 36,000 people there.
Hell yeah.
And it's just in the middle of, like, there's nowhere that I saw that was like a close city.
Right.
So it's just this decent-sized town in the middle of Washington State. So, fuck yeah, guys.
Hey, everybody out at Lake Stevens, Washington, I want to thank you personally for starting my cult for me. We will be there soon.
Yeah, we are definitely liking it. You guys are number two, right behind Chicago. They just passed Danbury for number two. So, unbelievable. So, thank you, everybody listening, but especially the new listeners over there in Washington State, Lake Stevens. Fuck yeah, man.
Fucking right.
Plus, I gotta love this name of this town in fucking England.
I mean, Maidenhead. Is that a real fucking name in England?
It's on the
That's
fucking...
That's awesome as shit.
Isn't that the coolest fucking thing? Maidenhead, England has been in the top 10 cities listening for like a couple of months now.
Oh,
so
yeah. Thanks, Maidenhead.
Thank you. Maidenhead. That is so badass. Love the name of that town.
Aces High. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Fuck it. Hey, I got to know more about it. Like, where did that come from, you know? So... guy's a iron. The mayor is like Bruce Dickinson or something. Right. That'd be fucking badass in Maidenhead, England. You know, Steve Harris or somebody. Yeah. So thanks to everybody, though. Really, you guys are awesome. So Chris, Joey, we got a lot on our plate tonight. Going to be taking a little East Coast trip, little NYC. Yeah. Very strange case of X-ray techs putting on their disco shoes and killing some motherfuckers. So.
Let's get our fucking frying pan murder on.
Yeah, man.
Benediction.
That's fucking brutal. That song, In Our Hands, The Scars, is so fucking wicked from the album Scriptures. Just fucking came out last week. Oh, my God, man. If you dig old school death metal, straight up in your fucking face.
I remember listening to them in high school and shit, dude. They were fucking badass back then.
So fucking wicked, man. I just started going backwards in their catalog when I'm listening to Killing Metal. And there's a song called The Gray Man about fish, and it's like, oh my God, fucking right. So wicked. So there's all kinds of stuff you can go dig on Benediction, but yeah, that new one called Scriptures, go check it out. So good on Nuclear Blast, I think. Tonight we're going to be doing a case that most of you probably have not heard of before. As we mentioned, Paul Bateson, who is an actor who found himself on the screen in one of the biggest grossing horror movies of all time.
Like, amazing movie. Fucking
yeah,
goddamn.
To me, the best one there ever was, The Exorcist. That movie freaked me out so bad when I first watched it. I've mentioned this before, but it stayed with me. And I am just entranced by that story. It's so good. And it's so funny how the misconception is of the film is that it's all about Linda Blair's head spinning around and spitting pea soup.
Right.
It's the story is about the exorcist,
not
exorcism.
The right, exactly.
His the person life doing it, the young priest, that's what the story's
and
about, and his anguish dealing with his mother's death and mourning it and feeling guilty that he wasn't there and all that. And at the same time, dealing with this fucked up demonic situation, you know. So it's that there's so much more to the story than that. That's what I guess I'm trying to say. But we're definitely not here to talk about his acting, you know, because that was not the thing that was very interesting.
That was the only thing he was ever in.
Right, right. But he did leave a life of murder, which is nuts. And at least one we're sure of. But it's possible that he killed at least six more in the 70s in New York City. A very twisted story. And we'll talk about the curse that seems to have struck quite a few times on the movie set of The Exorcist and the actors who were involved in the film. Even afterwards, some really crazy shit went on. So, Chris, you brought up Bateson, man. How did you stumble upon hearing about that?
I honestly don't remember where. I just remember some headline that I was coming across said something about exorcist actor convicted of murder or some shit. I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah,
so
that would have made me
look
too.
I'm gonna fucking, is this right? Real? Start fucking Googling whatever. I'm like, holy fuck, this dude in The Exorcist really killed somebody. That's
I know.
Fucked up, man.
And you brought this up quite a while ago.
Yeah, it's been a while ago, yeah.
You know, and some of these kind of hang around and then here we're talking about doing creepy shit for October. It's like, man, that's an interesting story. Of course, The Exorcist is as creepy as it gets. Right? And then you talk about all the curse stuff. So I think it was definitely good good decision we made to put this one here. So, Joey, were you aware of Paul Bateson before we talked about it?
Not really. Like, I knew that a member of the cast had gotten convicted of a homicide, just because you always see all those things about the weird things that are attached to The Exorcist, you know?
Right, oh, yeah. Right.
So I knew that that event had occurred. However, if you had asked me the name or something like that, I never would have known. So right. Doing this was so much cooler because it made me actually look a little deeper into it. And right. To actually learn more of, and then, you know, the connection, like, we're going to bring up to the other homicides,
right, exactly, yeah.
Is super cool. So we'll
right.
see.
Right. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I really didn't know anything about this, honestly. You completely surprised me with this one.
Like, another one that would be cool, like, maybe a different October or something, but also in the same sense, like, Poltergeist had so much weird-ass shit that
yes,
went around behind
that would
it.
Be a good one, yeah. Man. That would be a very good one.
Yeah.
Now, Paul Bateson is born in 1940 in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. His dad was an engineer, and Bateson would later blame his behavior as a way of lashing out against his father for not letting him go to the movies with his friends and forcing him to listen to opera on the radio. What the fuck?
Yeah, Dad wouldn't let me go to movies. I'm going to kill.
How dare he
sit around and make me listen to opera all day? I mean, fucking flip out, dude. I might fucking flip.
I don't know if I'd hit somebody over the head with a frying pan and stab them to
right,
death, but
I don't know, man.
I'd probably start breaking shit like a Ben Weyinger management.
Right.
Okay. Now,
starting with the radio.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I did not find a lot on the childhood stuff, so I'm really not aware of a lot. I'm sure there are some maybe books about him. I did not read any of those. He was in the Army in the 60s, but he had some issues, of course, with drugs and alcohol. And it only is going to get worse. He was kind of lonely, stationed in Germany, which all the guys I served with said, if you're going anywhere outside the U.S., that's where you want to go.
Was
because
Germany?
It was all about drinking and like getting fucked up. And they were all the fuck about it. Yeah. So it was like,
spot.
So when I got hurt, I came down on orders to go to Korea, which would have sucked because I would have been there without my family.
Right.
It was unaccompanied. But Germany, you could bring your family, but not Korea. It's too close to that DMZ. It's too dangerous.
Right.
So that would have sucked because I would have been there for like 16 months. And then I would have, I probably would have got to come home a couple times, but that would have been about, you know, that would be it.
Right.
And that would have been tough. So anyway, I got hurt and never didn't have to go, but, definitely.
Said Germany was the spot.
Yeah, Germany's the place to be. So, if he's stationed in Germany, chances are, that would have been a thing. He did chill out for a while, though, after his discharge and eventually did move to New York City. I saw in 1964, he gets into a serious relationship with a man, but he would say that he was not exclusively gay. So,
whatever.
You know, yeah, exactly. Rumor has it that the other guy was a musician and that the relationship, you know, they're doing a lot of drinking, they're staying out late, partying, parties at their place.
Having a good time if they're living life, man.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing wrong with it. You know, they're going to Fire Island, which is a well-known, gay, friendly estate, place. I'm sure now it's probably more so, but I remember when I even lived out there. It was known as that. So, nothing.
Open back then when you lived there?
What's that?
That bar?
No, it's that the...
Fire Island
is a place. Like, it's an island.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, it's Staten Island. Fire Island's a small island.
Nice,
but,
okay.
Like, it's like a big, people with money go there. And it's, like, known for, being a more of a gay-friendly, especially at this time, environment. Now, Joey, we've talked about killers that have had issues with drugs and alcohol before. It definitely sounds like he's having some problems with it. I don't know. Maybe it was the sexuality, because we run into this sometimes with these guys, Dahmer and Gacy, struggling with that. I don't know if that was the case here or not.
Well, and it seems like, at that time, especially back then in the 60s and stuff, like a lot of people were doing a lot of stuff. So if you had an issue that came that became an issue in your life, like getting you booted out of the military. I mean, you're in a spot where all the other dudes are probably drinking too. Right. So it's not like you can be like, oh, right. Yeah. It's like, no, you just couldn't handle it and fucking, you know.
Yeah, you know all the other people on this platoon are fucking out there getting it.
But that's the whole thing that they talk about with serial killers and all that stuff. It's like, okay, well, how many of these people have these same you know, foreshadowing events in their life with their families or, you know, whatever it is. But how many of them actually go out and start killing people? Very few of them. So the same thing could be said with maybe Paul Bateson. It's like, yeah, he probably got drugs and alcohol, but being in the gay community back then and being in the military, especially going to Germany and all that, I'm sure everybody around him was doing the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure there was plenty of it. Yeah. So he does chill out, you know, but he's still struggling. It's like an ongoing issue. Chris, he's hit in 1969 with two major events that would fuck anybody up: the death of his mom and the suicide of his brother. I mean, holy shit!
Yeah, because mom died of a stroke, and then I didn't see why or how his brother, brother killed himself, but within the same year. So
right.
That would definitely fuck me. Like my mom, either one of them individually,
of course,
would fuck a motherfucker. That's what I'm saying. But both of them in the same year, within a couple months or so of each other, is like devastating as fuck, man.
Yeah, big time. So it would have definitely, if somebody's got a drug and alcohol issue, definitely not going to help matters dealing with two huge traumatic events.
It's I guarantee you, dude.
It's going to fuck them up. They're going to go back to using.
Never be sober.
No. So he does, though, get trained to work as a radiological technician and scores a good job at the New York University Medical Center in New York City. A long-term relationship, though, ends in 73, and Bateson moves to Brooklyn, very well liked by his coworkers, and was discovered, as we were saying, you know, by the director, William Friedkin, who would go on, of course, to direct The Exorcist.
I like the way, like, his demeanor with kids when he was actually there watching and shit.
Yeah.
His demeanor with the kids and everything. They were like, oh, my God, this guy's fucking awesome.
Yeah, he was so good at his job. And that's what Friedkin, you know, in 1972, he's given a tour of the hospital. And, of course, this is before HIPAA laws. This would be, you know, pretty much never going to happen today.
No.
This film director wants to come and watch, you know, surgeries going on.
I want to see how this goes on. Like, you can't do that anymore.
Because, you know, that's pretty cool. He knew he wanted to shoot a scene where she's being tested and x-rayed and stuff, and he wanted it to look real. So he wanted to see how it was done so he could see who he's going to cast to play this. And then when he saw them work and they worked so well together, he actually hired all of them, the doctor, the nurse, and Bateson, who was legit an x-ray technician. So they did this procedure, and, you know, that's, you know, where he was so well liked. It was just really crazy to think that he would have gone, you know, down the path that he did. But Friedkin was just blown away by what they were doing.
And because he liked the realism of it, was what it was, I think.
Yeah. And when
it was real, but.
Yeah, the scene came out amazing.
Yeah, it really did. And it's like heralded in the medical community, because when they do this scene with these tests, it was, I'm trying to see if I've got the name of the actual procedure here in the notes. I'm not seeing it. But where they do an injection into her carotid artery. Oh, okay. It is in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't pronounce that, dude.
Yeah.
Angiography.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where they have to inject into your carotid artery. And then when they did that at that time, it's not done this way anymore, but blood would spurt out.
Every heartbeat just spurts out until they get the hose in there for the fucking catheter or whatever.
Yeah. And so you're talking about having to work very quickly as blood spurting out. So he saw this and knew there's no fucking way I can make this look real.
Right. Without an actual person who knows what they're doing.
Right. And to make it look real like that, he wanted to have them. So I think that's, to me, that's pretty fucking cool that they were able to do that and actually use, you know, real people that would do this, that did this for a living. Now, Chris, depending on what you think of Bateson's involvement was with these murders, you know, he could have, in theory, been doing this at the same fucking time this was going on.
Well, like I said, we'll get into what the bodies or what these bags, these bodies were in and shit. Like,
right?
I mean, it's. I mean, I'm it's not possible, gonna put it past anything because and his surgical knowledge and the dismemberment and shit. Like, shit, man.
Yeah, it definitely points some fingers. Now, at the time, the medical community praised it, as we said, because it showed it in such a realistic way, and some thought the scene was so graphic. Which is kind of funny because you think of like how far in the like grotesque factor movies have gotten
the way they are now compared to that.
Blood spurt and that is like nothing. Like that's like a cartoon,
right?
Compared to what you see in movies like Saw and shit like that. Hell, you know, really brutal stuff. But
fucking
you know,
goddamn hatchet, fucking like that shit'll fuck you up, dude.
Well, right. So this is nothing like that. But at the time, you know, this would have been a big deal.
Right.
And I'm amazed, Joey, that how quickly, though, the movie came out in 73 and he was on the set or at the hospital in 72. So, I mean, that's pretty quick, you know, from filming to putting it all together to release. They must have really just fucking cranked it out.
Yeah, that's super fast for a movie like that. I feel like... from things that I saw about it, though, that as the movie was getting filmed and everything, that a lot of advertising execs and other people in the industry saw that it was going to be something special.
Something
it was going to make some money. Yeah. So then they all started jumping on it. Did a rush push to get it put out.
Sure.
But, man, it's such a great fucking movie.
Oh,
And I think that maybe because they did that, maybe there was less opportunity for them for cut even more that they would have,
right?
You know, so
didn't this come out like on Christmas too or something fucked up like that?
I don't remember.
I thought it was, I could be wrong, but I thought it was,
but I also saw that the hospital actually cut off a section of the hospital for them to film in for like 2 weeks or some shit.
Oh wow.
So like they had influence.
Like how much does that fucking cost?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
A lot. Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, what's funny is that, you know, they're talking about 1973 and the blood spurt and everything like that.
Right.
And for back then, you know, kind of, you know, freaky, mostly probably because it had to do with a kid, honestly. But because then you go to 1 year later, 1974, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre comes out.
Right.
And that movie was just fucking brutality.
Yeah. Oh, brutality.
Which, you know, funny thing about that movie was when Tobe Hooper made it, his full intention on that movie was to make a PG movie so that the teenage crowd could watch it.
Right.
And that's why there's no cussing, there's no nudity in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
This is violence.
But then they give it to the fucking movie, you know, and then they watch it and they're like, are you fucking kidding me? A PG? You gotta be kidding. So we got the R rating, but just funny side story about that.
That is funny, man. Now, at the time The Exorcist was released, Bateson's drinking is getting completely out of control. It was starting to affect his social life. He was a very annoying drunk, apparently. 1975, it's now affecting his job performance. He gets fired. And that'll probably happen.
Don't drink at work.
Yeah, not a good idea, especially in a fucking hospital setting like what he was doing.
Right. He certainly seemed to be a guy that couldn't handle his inebriations very well.
Not at all.
And probably the beginning of the end with this fucking shit.
Yeah.
Now, September 1977, a writer, Addison Verrill, who covered movies for Variety magazine, was found dead in his New York City apartment on Horatio Street. He had been beaten and stabbed, and there was an obvious sign of struggle. At first, the cops thought maybe it was a robbery, but then they realized there's no forced entry into the apartment.
And there's nothing missing.
Right. The obvious stuff they could have taken, they didn't. And they did take a credit card, though, and that was later kind of ties him into it. But anyway, a lot of beer cans and half liquor bottles. So sounds
you
like a Shawback.
Liquor bottle half fucking full. That's
that's insulting.
Weak, dude.
Shawback Nation, it'd be empty, right?
Right, that's fucked up.
So a friend of Addison Verrill, a gay activist and writer, Arthur Bell, wrote about a murder in the gay publication, The Village Voice. And the article spoke out not only about his friend's murder, but about how many of the gay men were being murdered there in Greenwich Village, where the, you know, they weren't being solved. Now, the village is a well-known area where there are a lot of homosexuals. You know, that's where the village people comes from. It's been a thing for a very long time. And right. again, nothing against it, just saying a stating a fact. The murders that had gone on, you know, recently were, you know, being reported as the bag murders, since they involved gay men who were found floating down the Hudson River.
Yeah.
That's dismembered in plastic
cut
bags.
Up into pieces.
Yeah, so I heard somewhere where they were also using the derogatory name the fag bag murders, but I had only heard that in one source. So
that's
I'm like,
up, dude.
That is fucked up. So I'm not going to, you know, keep saying that. I'll just we'll leave it as the bag murders. Now, Chris, it did sound like Addison Verrill was a frequent customer at a couple of the well-known S&M bars like the Anvil and Mineshaft. Sorry.
That's...
you know, but Bell said he wasn't into that sort of thing, but he liked the guys that went there. So, I mean, I don't know. This, you know, sounds like the underworld, so to speak, in that time period would have been more of an underground
kind of thing. But
a little more.
Still,
you know.
I mean, it's all... He wants to go check out who he wants to check out.
Of course,
so
yeah.
Fucking right.
Yeah.
I go wherever I want.
Exactly. Now, Joey, I mean, what the hell with the bar names crack me up with some of these, but, you know, it's
yeah.
clever mean, little names, you know.
I guess if you're trying to draw in the crowd that you're looking for, right. You know how to
Mine
do
Shaft
it.
Sounds like a good place to be.
Hence Hooters.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Or Cheeks, right?
I'm going to open a bar called Looking for Hot Twat. Wonder if I'll get anybody to come in ever.
Ever.
The article that Bell wrote got quite a bit of attention. 8 days after the murder, a man claiming to be the killer contacted Bell, even though he asked people to call police with any information on Verrill's murder. The man called to correct the record and said, you know, since Bell was the person, he called him a psychopath.
He's like, you know, just called him. He's like, I didn't care about that. I killed motherfucker.
Yeah.
He called me a psychopath,
right.
dude.
And we've heard that
we
one
need
before.
To get this fixed. Don't ever fucking call me that. Yeah, we've heard that before. Don't make fun of somebody sounding like a certain cartoon character.
That's right.
Don't,
God forbid.
Don't
you know,
do
but
that.
It's cool that they chopped him up with a hacksaw in the bathtub. But yeah, so this is, it reminds me of that, you know. Now, Bell wrote a follow-up article, you know, and recounted his conversation. And with the man claiming to be Verrill's killer, he said that he was gay, needed the money, and he was an alcoholic.
Money for liquor.
That's right.
And
so,
dick.
You know, that and some pepperoni and some fucking chicken chips, you know.
some pepperoni, some chicken chips.
He said that he ran into Addison Verrill at Badlands, which is a bar. They had a few drinks, which turned into pills and cocaine.
Sounds
back
like
at Verrill's apartment. They had sex, and the killer said that he was wanting more than that from Verrill, but he was not interested, so he hit him over the head.
Don't like rejection, man.
Apparently not. Bam.
I'm not going to fuck no
more? With the frying pan over the head. So pretty brutal, Joey, getting out of control. And like Chris said, he hated that rejection, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty extreme way to go about it, I suppose.
Right?
Like, you know, compared to the most of the shit that we talk about in this fucking, you
I
know,
mean,
right.
that's not the
this
worst
podcast, shit. We know what's going on.
No,
that's brutal, though. I mean, fucking frying pan, like, God damn.
Yeah, yeah, and then stabbed him to death, yep. I think, after that. So pretty harsh.
I didn't see a whole lot of like insight into the actual like the homicide itself, like pertaining to how many times he stabbed her.
Yeah, the number
like
of stabbing.
I was looking
I didn't
a little
either.
Deeper, but it was hard. I didn't see much.
Yeah,
no, I didn't
lot.
See anything either. I'm sure it's there. It's just how far you know much time you got to look. You
how
know?
Deep is your web?
Now, Chris, the guy told Bell that he didn't want to say who he was, because he would lose his license. So, of course, that's given a little bit of a clue.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get... Either way, if you tell them who you are, if you're the killer, you're going to lose everything. Anyway.
Right.
If you're worried about a license for a job or driver's license, you
right.
definitely have a prominent job if you're
right.
worried about and everybody's going to know who you are.
Right. They're going to probably think medical, you know, law, something like that, you know. Now, when Bell called the police about it, they knew it was legit because the killer had said something about a stolen credit card, which, of course, they left out on purpose. So they knew this was legit. They figured the guy would call Bell again, and of course he did. But this time, it wasn't him. It was this guy named Mitch who said the killer was Paul Bateson. So he called him and said, hey.
Right, gave him his name.
Yeah, I met this guy in a rehab not that long before. He claimed he told me about the murder. And he may have been the one who talked about the other bag murders, too. I'm not sure. Because I know it was he confided in a friend, and I'm not sure if it was this one or a different one. But Mitch said he didn't know that that was even really his name because he also went by Johnny Johnson as another name.
I wonder if that's his film name.
I know. That's why I was laughing.
Other films, not The Exorcist.
No, no. I know what you mean.
He did say that he was unemployed x-ray tech. So he knew that he, you know, told him that. So, you know, they're starting to put this together. The guy said he was going to lose his license. Boom, he's an x-ray tech. Maybe something's there. And, of course, Stephanie Ruskinoff, our listener, she's an x-ray tech.
Right, yeah, and I saw her comment on there.
Posted the Paul Bateson thing. She was like, hooray for x-ray techs something like that. So that was cool. So thinking about you, Stephanie.
Shout
about
out this to x-ray
crazy
techs.
X-ray techs.
Don't go killing nobody.
Yeah,
now.
Right? No, nope. Don't get any ideas here. The police met up with Mitch and clear him of any involvement with the murder. So they did check him out, but apparently he was okay. But, of course, they act on this information. They don't want to take a risk of him doing, you know, hurting anybody else. So they go to arrest him. Chris, they find him drunk. And he's fucking hammered. At his apartment there in Brooklyn. And when they ask him if he knew why he was being arrested.
Yeah, just points at the article in that Village Voice paper.
Yeah.
Like,
he must have had it like up on the wall or something.
Reminiscing about the things.
Yeah. Or laid out all over his apartment.
Right. You know? It's like, well, that's why it's all over the place.
Yeah.
So he just confesses, man.
And they said he confessed to the crime and he did give a written confession at the police station. Joey, this is definitely a pretty quick resolution to this one. I mean, it was, you know, a couple of weeks later that they're in contact with him. And then, you know, pretty quick after that, he called the second time or Mitch called and gave him the name. And then they knew. So pretty quick.
Well, depending on how concrete the case, which it seems like he probably would have been really concrete. Paul Bateson, if he knew he was already popped off for that one, might have been also quick to get it through too, because if he was possibly, you know,
these others,
did the other homicides, maybe he's like, oh, okay, you got me on this one, I can make it through that,
right?
You know what I'm saying?
Sure,
now put me away and forget about me again,
right?
But who knows, it's hard to help. But no, like you said, I mean, especially for like New York at that time, they had a lot of shit they were dealing with.
Yeah, New York was really bad at that time.
Yeah,
in
so
the
70s. For them to get them through that quick, that's fast.
Now, Arthur Bell would interview Paul Bateson while he was in jail at Rikers Island, which is one of the most brutal of all fucking prisons. That'd be another.
Yeah.
We could easily do an episode on Rikers Island. It's fucking brutal. Bateson told him about his life and how he was glad that jail had helped him stop drinking, actually. Bell said that he would might have taken Bateson up on a few drinks at his apartment if he was in Addison Verrill's place. So apparently he's very personable.
Yeah.
Would have been pretty easy to, you know, talk his way into a situation. And obviously that's fucked up because that's how these guys strike. They're not
the
creepy, weird dude. It could be a Bundy or a Paul Bateson or somebody that's very personable. Right. Dahmer. You know, these guys were good at doing what they did, you know.
Charisma, man.
Yeah, for sure. He's obviously very good at it. Now, the Exorcist director, William Friedkin, would also go to see Bateson at Rikers Island through his attorney. He contacted the attorney and made it happen. He liked Bateson, and he wanted to offer his support for the trial for second-degree murder. Friedkin said that Bateson admitted to him that he killed Addison Verrill and that the police were trying to get him to confess to the bag murders. Another
one of them coarse confessions. Yeah. Which, I mean, if you think about it, like, he
fits that profile, right? I mean.
Yeah, but he left his body there and didn't get rid of it. So, like, why right. wouldn't he do the same thing instead of giving, and then start calling and shit? So.
Right. It does seem odd. It did definitely change in MO there. But, you know, sometimes they do that. We see that with Charles Albright. Right. You know, some of the victims were displayed different than others. Well, and eyes.
It sucks to say, but the stigma, too, was even worse for cops on these communities, I'm sure, back then, like the gays and all that. So
right.
for them to be like, oh, yeah, we got this guy, and we can pin all these and close these cases.
Oh, yeah.
He's a freak anyway to them. You know,
that's a good point, and they're trying to railroad him into it, possibly. Yeah. It's certainly a valid point, and that would have been Bateson's claim from the get-go that right. they were trying to get him to convince him to testify that he did these others. And Friedkin, though, goes on to say in some interviews, it was one of them was on a podcast. I did not listen to it. I've seen Friedkin interviewed before, but not about this, where he talks about that he believed that Bateson was the one that did it.
Really?
He really did.
Which he would have, you know, been more personable to be talking exactly, to him. Yeah. Probably could right. sense things a little bit.
Yeah, and he actually bought the rights to do the movie on Cruising, which was actually a novel about the gay underbelly, you know, the subculture we talked about with the bars. And them and the police going undercover in that environment trying to catch a serial killer. But when Friedkin directed the movie, he used it as a way to kind of frame it around a little bit more the Bateson story right, yeah. without coming out and saying that's what it was. A lot of people criticized the movie, thought he portrayed the gay community in a really bad way. I've never seen it, but I'm just saying that that was something that he talked about and certainly did that movie about it in 1980. And Chris, you know, these bag murders are pretty fucking gruesome, man.
Yeah, like, what was it, 6 bodies found, like, floating yeah. in the Hudson?
Yep.
Dismembered in bags that came from the medical center he worked at.
The department, even.
Yeah, the department, even, and everything.
That's probably what Serial Killer 101 is.
Don't use
printed yeah. bags from your work to dispose of the bodies.
Yeah, and that was like the issue with the clothes, too. Like, they said some of the clothes like looked like they were bought in the village area.
Right,
so,
right.
Which was the same area that he hung out at all the time. Right. So they just like, which I could see how they could put the everything together and well, be like, sure. okay, this is, could be him.
It he killed this could dude.
Why
been.
Couldn't he have killed these people?
But right.
it's different, though.
Yeah, 1975 to 1977 is when they said this happened. And like you said, they thought with the clothes, they kind of traced them to these shops in Greenwich Village, which would have catered more to gay patrons. The bags, you know, used is just really like, a pretty damning calling card like there from the neuropsychiatric department at the NYU Medical Center. That's so not up. Very smart. That's, of course, where he had been employed. Police also believe the person who cut up the bodies had some skill.
Which he would have had.
So he would have had some skill. I mean, not again, no he Catherine wasn't a Knight surgeon. Skill. Yeah, not Catherine Knight skill. But, you know, he's not like a surgeon, but he certainly, I'm sure, could work with a scalpel. I mean, he's had to do some things. And he's been around it. I also heard that Bateson confessed to the murders to the police, but then later recanted, said he was intoxicated.
That's what I'd do if I confessed to shit. Like, well, sure. I was drunk. Right,
exactly. And apparently he told a friend that he killed the others. That's where I wasn't sure if this friend was Mitch or if it was somebody right. else. But that I'm uncertain about because, like we found, there's a lot of unknowns with this story. Yeah. I'm sure they're somewhere, but in the time I had, I didn't find it. Now, Joey, these murders definitely, you know, very legitimately could have been, yeah. you know, Bateson. I mean, it certainly fits, you know, the surgical skill, the bags, you know, yeah. the fact that he obviously killed. It's not like he never killed anybody.
Right. And, you know, the sad situation of it is going back to the, you know, the relevance by the police department, I guess, in this is the fact is you got all these homicides And if they had some kind of evidence, like we're talking about the bags and all that stuff, look deeper into that and try to find a resolution to what was right, going on. But the sad thing is they were probably like, yeah, we're not going to spend all this money of our, you know, police right. department to go into all this whenever to us it's not that important. Sadly, true. You know.
Yeah. I think you're exactly right.
I think they could have found out more about the origins of those homicides. Didn't care. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if they were unidentified, so yeah. they didn't have families chasing after them
exactly.
like you typically would have, you know.
And you know, I mean, fucking New York City, thousands and thousands of, you know,
oh my gosh,
missing people yeah. every year. And
yeah.
It's hard, I understand.
It could have got buried, that, you know, but. Especially Son of Sam would have yeah. been going on yep. in this time. So that's another part of this, too, that Son of Sam would have been in the mid right. to late 70s, right in the middle of all this. So 1979, his trial, he tried to get the confession thrown out because he said that the attorney said that Bateson was drunk and he had not been read his rights yet. He also claimed that Bateson did not call Arthur Bell to confess to the murder of Addison Verrill. And it took only 4 days, though, for the trial and guilty conviction, second degree, though, murder.
Yeah, second.
But he was guilty.
Yeah.
So a month later, at his sentencing hearing, the judge said he believed that Bateson was a psychopath. I thought, that's kind of funny if he used that term, because that seemed to piss him off.
Yeah, because when he called.
Like, you fucking, I'm not a psychopath,
dude. I'm not a psychopath, dude.
He believed that he was guilty of the bag murders. That's what the judge said when he sentenced him, but that there wasn't enough evidence.
Right.
He cited a confession Bateson had made to the friend. I keep mentioning that. And they had no other evidence, though. So, again, he's never charged for the bag murders, but he still gets sentenced 20 years to life. So he's at least got to do 20. And he does that and four more. So 24 years... He's finally released right before his 63rd birthday. He did complete parole, the record showed, in 08. And some have tried to track him down, but he's been pretty elusive.
Right, some thinks he was still living upper New York and shit.
Yeah, upstate New York somewhere. And then somebody did a search in the Social Security's database and came up with his name, his social, having lived in Pennsylvania, which, you know, that's where he was originally right, from.
And died in 2012.
Yeah, and died in 2012. He would have been 72. So it's very possible, Chris.
That.
What do you think?
I think he's probably dead. I mean,
I think so, too. I mean,
sense.
Whatever. He did his time. You know, I mean, it's fucked
yeah,
up, but he did
it's
his time.
Fucked up, but I'm
did he do the other six, though? I mean,
I don't know about that.
I don't know I don't either. Know, there's a lot of questions with that. And Joey, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it's likely that he was
the really
bag murderer?
It's really hard to tell. Like I said, I mean, he possibly could have been.
Right.
I think one of the hardest things for me to put together is like what Chris pointed out earlier is his MO was completely different with the homicide he got convicted of.
Right.
Compared to all the ones they were trying to look at to see if he did.
Right.
And also, since this is such a like kind of a lesser known case and all that, there wasn't really a lot to go off of to understand about the guy to see if he might be the kind of person that could have been capable of the dismemberments. And I mean, that's a whole different category than what happened to you.
Yeah, exactly. That's a huge different category.
Yeah, but, I mean, he hit him over the head with a frying pan and stabbed him, which is fucked up, but that's not chopping him up and putting him in bags and throwing him in the river.
Like, you know, it's still a homicide, and people that can do a homicide, obviously.
He might not have had the time for whatever reason. Right. Like, he had to get out of there, you know, because he wanted to make it look like a robbery.
Yeah.
So maybe he thought, you know, well, I don't want to go through all that. Maybe he ran out of bags. You know?
Right, yeah. He's like, fuck, I got fired. Now
God damn it, all I got is this fucking cheap-ass Walmart bag, you know? Got a fucking rip in it.
Stop and Shop.
Stop and Shop, there you go.
Stop and Shop.
There you go. So anyway, definitely an interesting one. You may have seen the portrayal of Bateson in the second season of Mindhunter. I forgot all about that. I actually watched that again and remembered it. But at the time, I didn't know who Bateson was, so it didn't really dawn on me about it.
Right.
And I have been known to nod off now and then watching TV. So it's very possible that I slept through the scene. I don't know. But definitely, it was on Mindhunter. I read that in
I haven't even watched any of the second season. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the second season is really good. There were quite a few crazy things, though, that happened during the filming of The Exorcist. I thought would be cool to mention the set actually caught fire after a pigeon found its way into an electrical box. That's not good. A little fricasseed fucking pigeon.
I'd have ate the motherfucker, dude.
They might have, man. The actress who played Reagan's mother, I thought this was crazy, Ellen Burstyn, was injured during a scene where she's thrown across the room, and she actually got fucked up and screamed.
Yeah, the scream in the movie is like they used
in the film, which is pretty funny. Fucked up her back pretty good. Two of the other actors who played smaller roles, one of them was Damien's mother, so the younger priest's mother, and then the other actor was a male. He was one of the priests that was on there. They both died after the filming, and their characters both die in the movie. Yeah. So that's just kind of weird. Linda Blair, who played Reagan, lost her grandfather during the filming, and the actor who played the older exorcist, of course, the great Max von Sydow, lost his brother while they were filming. And the actor who played the younger exorcist, who's Jason Miller, of course, Joey Exorcist 3, he was fucking amazing in that. He had a son that was struck by a motorcycle and seriously injured but lived.
Right.
So there is just fucking like all sorts of drama, and it still is going on. The actress who played the demonic voice of Reagan, she was an older actress. She has tragedy in her family where her son murdered his wife and kids and then took his own life in 87, so 14 years later. But still, it happened to her, and she was part of this, but worth mentioning. And in addition, I saw at one showing of the movie in Rome, a woman fainted in the theater and broke her jaw.
Get the fuck out of here. I didn't see that.
She sued Warner Brothers, and they said it was their fault, and they gave her some money.
Just shut her
settled
ass
it
up.
Out of court, but I'm like, God damn, you stupid bitch.
You know what's fucked up?
What the fuck?
Is, to be honest, that probably gained them fucking even more publicity for
the
movie.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh yeah, we'll pay you off
we'll
for that.
Settle out of court. That's free advertising.
Yeah, you rule.
Cost us maybe $50,000 or whatever they gave her.
Thank you.
I read in 2018, an article in 2018 in Esquire magazine about the curse, adding that a security guard and a special effects person on the set died shortly after filming, and that William Friedkin had brought in an actual Jesuit priest, Thomas King, to bless the set because all this shit was going on.
It's so, like, fuck, man. We can't pretty be having crazy. This shit.
Pretty crazy. Definitely some weird shit. In my opinion, you know, the best horror movie ever. I've always loved it. I love the book, the movie. William Peter Blatty, one of my favorite writers. That scene of them doing the exorcism in the book is by far the best written scene I've ever read. I was literally at the end of it, I was exhausted.
Hell yeah.
Right. I had to just put it down and be like, I gotta stop. It's that well written that you literally feel like you are in the middle of it. Yep. It's fucking amazing. By far the best written scene I've ever read in my life. It's fantastic. So anything, you know, you guys want to add to this story here?
I don't think so. Like you said, there's not a whole lot. It's to rough finding shit like on low stories like this to make it work, but we made it work. So I think we're all right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's just not a lot out there, but we talk about The Exorcist. We do usually reference Joey Exorcist 3.
Right.
Legion was the book.
Yep.
That book is as close to The Exorcist as you're going to get.
Yeah.
And I thought the movie was fucking amazing. It's too bad it had to be called Exorcist 3. It should have been called Legion.
Yeah.
And that's what Blatty wanted, but
they were capitalizing on Reagan is what it was.
Right. Yeah, they wanted the name of The Exorcist. Yeah. That's what The Exorcist 2 is ridiculous.
Yep.
That's not even worth watching. But Exorcist 3, though, if you've not seen it, Jason, the priest that plays the young priest in the first movie, is the one that we're talking about. Jason Miller, he's amazing. He's in both.
Yeah.
My research for this one was done with a couple of short documentaries that I saw on YouTube. If you search Paul Bateman, or Bateson, I'm sorry. Plus a couple of podcasts I heard that were pretty interesting. There was one I heard called This Is Not a Dream podcast. It was pretty decent. I have to admit, with our busy schedule this past week, and I honestly did not have any time to do the usual stuff that I do. I just had a lot going on.
Yeah, they're really not a lot, though, dude.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Next time, we're going to give you a bonus episode. That's what we did on Saturday. We recorded the Heart of Illinois show, Joey. Did you think we did that justice?
Yeah, we did really well.
Yeah, it's about 50 minutes or so. We talk about the show, the band's playing. We play some music, all the full songs, and talk about what the show's going to be like, because it's coming up on Halloween, of course, in Forest, Illinois, at the Horseshoe Saloon. So 3 o'clock it starts.
That's our
five
hopes.
Bucks, 12 bands, and a kick in the fucking Jimmy. So it's going to be killer. Of course, Murder Metal Mayhem will be there, so we're going to be there selling some merch, Chris, and hanging out with the people and doing some live Facebook shit with the bands, and it's going to be kick-ass. So,
right.
666 Club members will already have a link to listen to that this probably by the time this podcast is live or very soon after, so you'll get to hear it sooner if you're a 666 Club member. We're also going to be recording a Patreon-only episode next week. So while the HOI episode is playing, which you're actually going to get early, you're going to get it on Monday, so you get that early. And we're also going to give you a bonus, a second bonus next week, will be our full interview with Mark from Bear Mace. We'll talk about that later. And so next week we'll actually record Richard Ramirez, our screen door intruder, Chris, right?
Yeah. Can't wait to do Ramirez.
Yeah. I know, dude. Patreon only, though, just like the Dahmer one that we did. So you got to be a member of the 666 Club, and we appreciate the new members that have been getting involved. So thank you, guys. And if that's not a reason to join, I don't know what the fuck is. We did an interview with artist Jeff Gaither for that. We did that on Saturday,
talked
guys.
Talked to Ramirez a little bit. So
yeah, we talked about Ramirez with Gaither and how he wrote to him. And Joey, of course, you wrote to him as well. So that was cool. You got to talk with Gaither with us.
Yeah.
And Jeff's an interesting guy for sure and a very talented dude. And so we wanted to get him involved. So that Ramirez episode is going to be wicked with our stuff, plus the interview with Jeff Gaither. And check the episode description for a link to our Patreon page so you could join today, because it's just $3 a month.
And shit,
that's
man.
Nothing, and you're getting fucking Dahmer and
Ramirez.
More than
that on a cup of coffee.
Exactly. Dahmer
and
Ramirez.
That's fucking multiple times a day.
Big time. We've done our fair share of murdering tonight, though, guys. I hear that familiar music. I think it's CK. I think he put the Chinese stars down finally. He's got his fucking fists up in the air. So, Joey, what the fuck do we need to do, man?
Let's get our motherfucking metal on.
Known the world over as the master of metal, the crusher of posers, and Murder Metal Mayhem's knower of all things metal, hailing from Wild Man Street in Danbury, Connecticut, standing at 6 feet of brutal, punishing madness, weighing in at 220 pounds of poser pulverization, the one, the only, toughest bastard on the planet, Chris C.K. Kovacs!
Not alive, not great, critical motherfucker!
Fuck yeah, man.
The great metal motherfucker with us. What's up, buddy?
What's up?
Kicking it here at Horns High with Joey over here.
Oh,
CCK still got the mullet wig.
Yeah, he still got the fucking sea dirt wig on. Man.
He doesn't mind that one.
No, Chris's kid has a huge fucking blue wig,
dude. Yeah, she got
I was like, oh my god, we need to bring that over.
Yeah, she got this huge ass blue fucking wig, dude. I was like, yeah. Cash was like, dude, we got to take that to the studio.
So good to have you on, CK, but I see that Danbury has been dethroned from number 2 to number 3, fucking Lake Stevens, Washington. What
from,
the
from
hell?
Number 1.
Yeah,
Danbury went from number 1.
Well, Danbury was number 1 for a bit, and then Chicago's been dominating number 2, Danbury number 1, Danbury number 2, right in there neck and neck, and now Lake Stevens, Washington comes out of nowhere.
Represent.
And that's awesome. So it's great to see listeners excited and listening, and that's awesome. So
it's all good.
Yeah, and it's good that you're here. You were throwing Chinese stars at kids in the neighborhood to warm up. I hope you didn't hurt any of them, CK.
I wish I remember doing it.
Well, that's what I heard. Word on the street is you were throwing fucking
sometimes
Chinese stars.
Sometimes will get you, bro.
I heard that Oxys and Ninja Stars is a great time.
There you go.
Maybe.
So who do you have on tap tonight, CK?
We got a band that is a strange. It's a strange band. Came out of nowhere, like in 2011. They were actually formed in 2006 by this dude. The band is Ghost.
Yeah,
and they're out of Sweden, and they were formed by a guy named Tobias Forge. And from basically what it is Tobias Forge was a musician, and he was in all these bands, I guess, until then, that never really went anywhere. He was in some death metal bands and stuff like that. And I guess he decided he wanted to record a couple of tracks. He came up with this riff. And took one of his old band members from one of his bands and they recorded a couple of tunes. And His thing was like, it was kind of like a theatrical concept that he was coming up with.
Right.
And so basically the band formed, it was basically him and some other guys, and really don't know the names of the other people. They decided to he decided not to take his own name. He decided that he wanted to be called Papa Emeritus.
Yeah, Emeritus, I think it is.
Emeritus. Yeah. And the other guys in the band would be called the Ghouls.
Okay.
So, technically, nobody knew who these guys were. And they recorded a debut album, and the debut album came out in 2011 called Opus Eponymous. And it was released on Rise Above Records, which is Lee Dorian's label from Cathedral / Napalm Death, because Lee Dorian was one of the original vocalists for Napalm Death.
Right. I knew that name sounded familiar.
And the album took off.
Yeah, they're very popular. I'll give them that, man.
You know, and I kept on hearing before the album came out about this band, Ghost. It was a cross between Merciful Fate and Blue Oyster Cult.
Hmm.
Oh, that's a weird.
Yeah, that's so, a weird combination.
You know, so when the album came out, I bought it. And it really was, to be honest, if you could cross Merciful Fate with Blue Oyster Cult, that's what Ghost sounds like.
Hmm.
At least in the earlier days. Even like Tobias Forge, who originally did not want to be the vocalist, he offered the vocalist jobs to other well-known vocalists like Messiah Mercolin, the original vocalist for Candlemass, and a couple other people, and nobody took it. So by virtue of nobody else taking it, he decided that he was going to sing and be the guitarist. But kind of worked out because he has a kind of a distinctive voice. It reminds me of if King Diamond sung in his mid-range all the time without the falsetto.
Okay.
That's what kind of, to me, it sounds like. Hmm. But that first album came out and it blew up. Everybody was like wondering who this band was, who these people were. Was it a well-known band?
Right, with disguises on, so you don't know.
With disguises on. Was it a band that we know about? And people were just throwing these things out. And the thing is that it was pretty much a nobody who just came up with this concept. And
it worked.
Pretty smart.
Yeah, and it worked. And, they went on a lot of tours, opened for a lot of bands in the States and other parts of the world, opened for Trivium, In Flames, Mastodon, Opeth, and got their name pretty much out there. And in 2012, they started writing for the second album. I guess they didn't want to lose momentum, obviously. You know, you got the momentum going. You want to keep it going. You want to keep your name, keep your name going and make sure everybody doesn't forget you.
Right, you gotta get to.
You know, so what it came out was Tobias Forge was pretty much every year or every couple years or every album, he would change his stage name. So it'd be like Papa Emeritus 2 would be like for the next album, Infetizium. That'd be the name of the new album. And that album, actually, when they recorded, it was agreed by their management and Rise Above Records that it needed to go to the next step and that it was bigger than Rise Above could handle. So they actually signed with a major label with a label called Loma Vista Recordings, which is part of the Universal Music Group. So they're on a major label.
Right.
Obviously, more people will get to know them. They'll get the word out better. And that album came out, and that album did really well. I think it made the Billboard Top 100.
Yeah, they were very popular. They were doing like small stadium shows because they played in Bloomington.
Right,
and that's a small arena. I mean, it's a decent size. I don't know how many thousand you could fit in there, but
it's a bigger venue.
It's a pretty big place. They actually came to the music store I used to go to downtown Bloomington called the Music Center. It's not there anymore, but it was for a long time. I bought all my stuff there, and they actually came in there to buy some stuff that they needed. And Randy, the owner, or Andy, his son, one of the two, said that they couldn't have been nicer guys. They were really cool, and they all came in and bought stuff, and there were some things they needed, and they were just very friendly, and everybody that was with them was really cool. So that's, sometimes you hear the negative things, you know what I mean?
Right, especially when you're viewing the bigger shows.
Yeah, like these guys are in this little town, and they were just really friendly and nice and bought a bunch of shit. So that's cool.
Which is cool, and for some reason on this album, in the U.S., they had to tag the afterward. It was now they were known as Ghost BC for some reason, legal reasons.
That's weird.
That's weird.
For that album, they had to add on to BC, which was technically before Christ.
Right.
Again, that album did really well, and they toured with that. They played the Coachella Festival, Lollapalooza. Open for Iron Maiden, Slayer, Alice in Chains. And it was even because Dave Grohl actually produced the EP that came shortly after that, which was a four or five song EP. It had an original and a couple cover songs from like ABBA and some strange things like that. Their cover songs are from bands that aren't even
close to metal.
Right, exactly.
Huh.
It was even a rumor that Dave Grohl was at one point one of the ghouls playing live with him.
Oh, that's funny.
Which he has never confirmed or denied.
Right.
Interesting. But that adds to the mystique. I think that's kind of cool. Whatever. You know, Kiss made a living off it for a long time. You know, it's like, are they going to unmask and all that kind of stuff?
And at this point, it's kind of like, in the beginning, it was a gimmick, and it still is.
Right.
Just at up until like a couple years ago, you didn't know that Papa Emeritus was Tobias Forge.
Right.
That just came out a couple years ago.
Right.
And in 2015, they recorded the third album, Meliora, which was a little different than the last couple albums. Still a great album. Again, in my opinion, the first album is still the best album.
Okay.
At this point. That album did really well, really good too. And at some point, there was, I guess, some of the former members, because the unnamed ghouls have always been, I guess, for the most part, different musicians. It's been a rotating thing with the actual band.
Okay.
I guess some of the earlier ghouls from around, you know, the first, second album were decided that they were going to file a lawsuit against Tobias Forge for royalties and payment. Some of you said that this was you know, pretty much a way to get attention, that Tobias Forge was the one who actually did the lawsuit, but you know, who knows?
Right.
You know, and again, all through this, Tobias Forge is changing his alter ego, you know, to now this time it's Papa Emeritus III. And all through this, it's still the same concept. It's a satanic pope type deal.
Right. I knew there was some sort of satanic element to it.
Right.
Yeah, he's like a satanic pope. And, you know, they promoted that album. They actually, again, you know, they headlined their own shows. Bigger shows they played with, like, opening for Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. And they even started to bring out, you know, other doom bands with them and to try to get them noticed, like All Them Witches and Tribulation and bands like that. So, you know, they were trying to
bring the other bands up with them and shit.
Right, you know. And shortly after that, they released a live album. And as of now, that is the last album they released was in 2018? Yeah, 2018 prequel was released.
Huh.
And I'm not too fond of that album. To me, it was like a huge departure from the...
The live one?
No. The live one came out right before the fourth album.
Okay, I gotcha.
The fourth album came out, and I was not too... I'm not a big fan of the last album. To me, it was a bigger departure as far as sound compared to the other three.
I'll give the first one a listen. I've honestly never heard it. I listened to a few random songs when I was trying to find something to play, and some of it I was like, ugh, I didn't care for it. But I'm picky, I know that. But I did not, that I am aware of, listen to the first one. So I'll give it a listen, dude, legit.
Yeah, it's kind of an acquired taste. It's not, right? You know, something like, you're going to be like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Right.
You may not catch your ear right away. You might have to listen to it like two or three times.
Gotcha. Okay.
But as I'll far as out. Right now, last month they confirmed that they have written a fifth album, and it will be released in 2000, the end of this year, supposedly. See what happens.
Right.
But,
that's cool.
You know. See if he changes his alter ego again.
Yeah,
he
went from Papa Emeritus IV, maybe.
well, that was the last album. Oh, okay. And before that, before Papa Emeritus IV, he was known as Cardinal Copia.
Oh, wow.
So is it going to be Papa Emeritus 5? Who knows?
Right.
But it's a little, it's a cool gimmick.
Yeah,
that, you know,
I think it's cool. Whatever.
And you know, the music holds up, and like I said, the first album I think is an awesome album. Still blows me away to this day.
Cool.
Ghost, check them out.
Yeah. You got a lost classic for us, CK. You said Joey might know this one?
I think Joey may know this.
I think I do know it. I was looking at it, but I can't quite recall, which, you know, gives it the lost classic element.
Right, right. Yeah, because you got some good ones you've come up with, CK. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, these guys were from New Jersey, like in the mid-'80s, late-'80s. Gothic Slam.
Right.
And they're one of those bands that I saw live with, and for the life of me, I can't remember who I saw them open for.
But you remember them.
But I remember them, and I remember that they just said they just came out with their debut album. I went and bought it, and the first album was called Killer Instinct, and it was an awesome album. I still love it to this day. It was on Toured Records / Combat, which was the same label as Exodus.
Right.
And like a year later, Epic signed them, and they released Face the Crowd. And they had a video for, which song was that? Oh, fuck. If you go on YouTube, it'll pop up the video. That was heavily played on MTV at the time.
Back when they played videos.
Yeah, right. But a cool little band. They, after like 88, they just broke up, and nobody heard from any members except for one member, the drummer, Dave Shivari, who went on to play with Propane, MOD, and I think he plays with El Nino right now.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I met that dude. We played with El Nino at the Canopy Club in Urbana, right, and right. I remember that the drummer was the Propane drummer.
Yeah,
very nice guy.
Yeah, he's the only one who's around now.
Right. Interesting, interesting. Well, I think I hear that familiar music that tells us we're going to talk about something special. A little 6-6 fucking 6.
Tea time.
Hell yeah. All right, fucking 6-6 fucking 6, I'm Onslaught, crushing it, and that usually means we're going to talk about what we've been listening to. Chris, what you been jamming over there, Shawback Nation, man?
A lot of fucking just random shit, but I've been jamming like Ailstorm at work, dude. Ailstorm's fucking awesome. They
really?
Just,
okay.
It's pirate metal, man.
Pirate
metal? Yeah, I didn't say Hailstorm. Ale, like A-L-E, like Ailstorm.
Oh, Ailstorm.
Pale, do what? Drunk pirate metal.
Yeah, it's straight up pirate metal, dude. I fucking love it, dude. It's sing about drinking all the time and fucking people with anchors, fucking. And it's fucking great, dude. I fucking love it. It's so fun. Check out Ailstorm. It's fucking great.
Okay, yeah, I just said Hailstorm. No, not Hailstorm. Make fun of you.
No, Ale. Ailstorm.
Joey, what about you, dude?
I've been jamming at Camel Corpse of Bleeding In.
Fuck yeah, dude. We jamming the Bleeding on the way here, dude.
Deicide. I was jamming Deicide, Legion, and Once Upon the Cross because I got them both on the same disc. Jungle Ride, Dead and Buried.
Nice.
And then Macabre's got their new album coming out.
How is that?
Next month. Well, it's coming out next month, but they released this new video for Your Windows Open, which is their song about Richard Ramirez.
It's so fucking good.
I watched it so many times, but dude, it was funny because they show the scene with him, you know, slicing the screen. And the whole time, Chris was just laughing. Screen door intruder.
Chris was just like, screen door intruder.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll have to check that out. I didn't know that was
out. The video is really good.
It's so fucking good.
I'll have to check it out.
Have you seen that, CK?
I've seen parts of it. I gotta watch the whole thing though.
Yeah,
I definitely gotta watch it.
Yeah, get on YouTube, check that shit out. It's fucking brutal.
What about you, CK? What have you been jamming lately?
I've been jamming New Saint, New Armored Saint, some old Armored Saint.
Yeah, how's that new one? You just got it, man. Is it cool?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love the two songs they released. I'm sure the whole thing kills, though.
Yeah, it's actually four of the songs
live at that whiskey show.
And I've also been jamming. Holy shit. Black Sights, the Mark Sugar's other band.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is it good?
I love talking
about that during the interview.
Yeah, I listened to some of it. It is really good.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet.
I like it a lot. It's definitely totally different. Different than Bear Mace.
Yeah, a lot different.
But I love it.
Yeah, I figured you would. When I heard it, I knew it was something you would like just from, you know, what I know you dig, and it's good stuff. I've been jamming the shit out of that new Benediction. Holy shit.
Oh, that's awesome, too.
Oh, my God. That is so fucking sick. And I also was checking out Live in Paris. A Slayer album came out this year. It's actually really good. It almost sounds like a crowd audio. Hmm. Like, it's not a professionally, but it sounds good.
Right.
Yeah. But it sounds like you could hear people around them and stuff. Yeah, but it's cool because it gives a cool, like, in the mosh pit feel.
It sounds like a soundboard recording.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty damn good for what it is. I was actually kind of impressed with that. So I've been jamming that. And, of course, podcasts like usual to get ready for this one. And the future episodes. So, all right. Well, very cool. Joey, what's the latest with HOI? We got the new episode coming out next week. They get it on Monday.
Right.
So we can get an early jump and hope they get their asses to Forest, Illinois on Halloween Day, man. It's going to be badass.
I mean, that's the hopes. I ain't going to lie. I got some pretty bummer news today about Pritzer talking about trying to close down some of the shit coming up on Thursday.
Yep. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know how it is. Damn. In this day and age, like, everything's up in the air. Everybody says everything. So you don't really know what's going to happen. So I'm not trying to fret about it, but of course I am a little bit
perturbed. I didn't hear that.
Because I've just had people hit me up like, oh, man, did you see this? And I'm like, man, if, you know, whatever happens is going to happen. Regardless,
we're planning
as of right now, you know, it's on. And, I mean, fuck, it's only a week and a half away. And
keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, I got my fingers crossed. I mean, if it doesn't happen, I can't get mad about it whatsoever.
I know.
Because I've watched every other fucking show way bigger than mine also
get shut down. Yeah.
Now, we'll hope for the best.
Yeah.
We did do an interview on Saturday with Mark Sugar. We talked about his other project, Black Sights, but we interviewed him mostly for his work with Bear Mace, death metal band from Chicago. We all got to do that. That was really fun. 20 minutes talking with Mark about metal and just cool shit. Good dude and really good guitar player. And in the other band, he's actually a really good singer.
He sings.
But in the death metal band, he's just playing guitar. We'll be using part of that up in an upcoming episode, and actually going to share the interview as a second bonus next week.
Nice.
So the full 20 minutes, you'll get it next week, even if you're not a 666 Club member. So there you go. Throwing double the bonuses time. Around.
Double time.
Trying to make up for not doing a full episode next week. But the good thing about it is we're doing the Richard Ramirez story, and that'll be a Patreon-only episode.
Right.
Which hopefully will incentivize you to join up and help the cause and get to check out that wicked bonus content with the little screen door intruder. So,
and you know, I mean, the way that we did the HOI bonus episode, even if the show were to end up getting shut down, I wouldn't even mind just playing it anyway for the people, because we talked about so much stuff that led up to it.
Of course.
And the
we're playing it next week no matter what. Yeah, no, I agree. I think we got plenty of metal talked about tonight. CK, though, you did say you had some new releases you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we actually have some new releases in the next couple of months.
What's going on? We got
next month, the new Sodom.
Oh, fuck What is that called? Do you know?
Genesis 6.
Oh, man, I fucking love Sodom, man. Nice. Okay.
I can't wait for that. And that's actually on E1 Records. You got also on E1 Records, I think, is next month, is Hatebreed.
Okay.
Another one on E1 Records, Within Ruins. Next month, you have the new AC/DC.
Right. I heard about this a lot lately.
A new live Iron Maiden album out next week, double CD.
Wow. Really?
From the last tour, yep.
All right.
That they decided to do at the last minute. And they also have, I know they have an album in the can for next year. If you're into, you know, your progressive side, you got Fate's Warning next month.
Yeah, do you know when in November that
November 13th or something like that?
Okay.
It's like mid-November.
Yeah, I can't believe I got my shirt already.
Yeah, that's out for. I looked at that. That is out. That's the only thing from that. That is available.
Interesting.
You also have Flower Kings, another progressive band. An album that I'm looking very forward to hearing because I heard the first tune from it, the new Mr. Bungle.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know there was a new one coming out.
It's actually the song I heard is a thrash song.
Interesting.
The second album from Kill or Be Killed, which is the supergroup of Max from Sepultura, Greg from Dillinger Escape Plan, and I forget the other two guys.
Damn.
They ain't that fucking super then, are they?
No, they are. It is. I just
not
can't
CK,
remember.
I mean.
New Live Autopsy is next month. And end of this month is the new Carcass EP. And there's a band, there's an EP coming out called the Nuclear Power Trio, which is an EP recorded by a member from the band Elysion and two other guys.
Okay.
And it's three guys dressed up. They have masks on. Like one has a Donald Trump mask. The other one has a Kim Jong-un, whatever his name is, mask, and one is dressed up as Putin. So they're called Nuclear Power Trio. Nice. And it's really good stuff. It's really good stuff.
Holy shit.
Really good stuff. Check them out. But that's what you got coming out. But then, you know, it's a double-edged sword because you got all these new albums coming out, and you got no way to promote them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly, you know, is right.
No, so are we going to be seeing more of what Armored Saint did?
Right.
As far as, you know, virtual listening parties.
Right.
Virtual shows. Maybe with the virtual shows, you could throw in some bundles with it.
Right. That's what Armored Saint did, you know.
Yeah, you buy the ticket, you get the CD, a shirt, or whatever.
Right.
But I think you're definitely going to be seeing reinvention of the live... of how the bands play.
I agree.
Live.
I think there'll be more of that kind of stuff even when it comes back. I still think you'll see some of that stuff. So,
you know,
people will figure out a way to get it to work. It just it's hard being in the scene as long as I've been in it. I've seen so many different things come and go, and it's like, man, this is just a rough one. But we'll figure it out. We're metalheads. We'll persevere. So.
Always do.
All right. Well, we talked about plenty of metal tonight, so... CK, what the fuck do we need to do?
We gotta get our mayhem on!
Looking for a Christmas gift for that loved one who's hard to buy for? Well, look no more. Pick up an audiobook from our latest collection, Serial Killer Classics, and hear convicted serial killers read the classics. How about Henry Lee Lucas reading Shakespeare?
Oh Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Or the weepy voice killer reading A Tale of Two Cities.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Or Danny Rowling singing The Night Before Christmas.
It was the night before Christmas and all through the house.
Visit our website, serialkillerclassics.com, and order one today. It's too fucking funny.
Oh,
dude.
My God. CK, if you don't get an Academy Award for that performance, weepy voice killer.
Dude, I feel like the fucking feds are going to call up CK and be like, we think this is you now.
We think this is, yeah.
God. That was damn, right? Funny too. That'd be funny. Gets to knock at the door.
Like, hey,
we need to speak to CK, the great metal motherfucker.
I'm pretty sure that you spent time in St. Paul or St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Like in I the said, 50s. I didn't know I had that in me.
Yeah, dude, that was fucking amazing. That was amazing. And before that, of course, Ghost with Absolution. I'm not sure which album that's on offhand. CK, you probably know, but
I think it's off the second album.
Okay, so that's the one I picked. It wasn't too bad. Like I said, there were some things I heard. I was like, eh, it doesn't really fit. I thought that one fit pretty well. So
if I wasn't heavily sedated, I could probably give you a better answer.
Right? That's okay. That's all right. Well, we are in Mayhem. Good place for you to be. So sedated.
Oh, yeah.
Joey said he's got a little Mayhem story for us.
Yeah.
So.
This one kind of got brought up by my mom the other day, which I'll tie that in.
Oh, nice. But,
cool mom story.
Yeah. No, it's not really, but it just had a kind of a tie-in that brought it back up to me. But it's not an incident. Whenever I was fucking 16 back in high school, I took a class trip down to Mexico, you know, with a whole bunch of other students.
And, right.
You know, the whole time was nothing but just kind of insanity for me. So it was fucking awesome as shit. So I was like, man, this is a good Mayhem story. So, you know, I go down there. I mean, I'm 16, and this is back where I just didn't give a fuck about nothing. Yeah, I was, you know, very dumb to the world and everything else. I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Right.
But, you know, I go down, and I go on this trip. I mean, it's great. I went with a bunch of students from other schools and, you know, I think there was a group of probably 10 or 12 of us from my school, and two of the chaperones were my Spanish teacher and her husband, who's the principal of the junior high.
Right.
So it was really cool. It was a fun time. So, like, we go to Mexico City first, and I remember, like, some of the craziest shit I ever seen was while we were down there, we're walking around and fucking, like, I just see the riots, like, we see the riot squad just run by, fucking full shields battalion.
Oh, shit.
Dude, we're like, what the fuck? And not one person out on those streets blinked an eye. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, right.
To them, it was just like, oh, yeah,
this
see?
Happens all
like,
the time,
what
bro.
The fuck?
Right.
It's like rain in Florida. Clockwork.
Oh, yeah.
Or the gaslight with that dude that got stabbed in front of the place. The owner's just standing, and this motherfucker's bleeding out on the sidewalk. Like,
no, he's not
coming
in.
What the fuck? Wow, I got to go play now. Sorry, later. Hope you live.
But hell yeah. So we're down in Mexico. Now, mind you, in Mexico, at that time, and I'm sure it might still be the same, if you could see above the bar, you could drink in the bar. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it wasn't really like an age limit thing so much down there. So we went down there, and like they're in the know that like you can get yourself off into stuff. They warned us about the people that were going to come up to you offering you you know, drugs and all things of that nature.
Right.
So, like, they're telling me all this, and I'm just
and
like,
he's like,
okay,
what I was waiting
gonna get
for, bro.
But, so we're in Mexico City, and me and this dude were out by the hotel the first, you know, one of the first nights we're down there, and there's people that are walking around, and they're passing out, like, little business cards for you to go to their clubs and things like that. So,
right. So
we talked to this one guy, and he's talking to us, and, I mean, this is what they fucking do. They go around and they fucking con people.
Get the tourists.
Sure. Right,
shit.
To get
you
in. It's exactly like fucking, what's his name, on fucking Born East L.A., you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Chris Elliott, right?
Yeah.
So it was just like that. But anyway, so we meet this one guy, and he starts talking to us. He's like, oh, you're familiar? Illinois, yeah, I'm from Chicago, right? He strikes up a conversation, gives us his business card, his fucking, the bar he's promoting is called Las Uvas, the grapes. So, you know, we go back up to the hotel room, and it's like, man, we're like, should we go there? We're like, yeah, let's go there.
Fuck it,
so, we like take off out of it. This is at night, so we're all supposed to be in the hotel room, you know.
Right.
So me and him
16
take
years
off.
Old on a
yeah,
high school
yeah.
trip.
Yeah. And we're like, fuck that. And the bar was like really close. It was only like a block and a half away or something. So,
right.
So we go. And I remember we go in there and we get sat down at the table, order our drinks. You know, we both get a beverage. I can't remember exactly what it was, something alcoholic, you know. And we're probably in there for like a minute or so. And then I look over and I look up and then on the stage, you know, a lady dancing. I was like, oh, shit. We're in a strip club, you know. So the bartender comes, brings us our drinks, or the waiter. And I mean, we weren't in there, I swear to God, probably 2 minutes. And I see the ladies on the stage. I look the other direction and in the fucking doorway, like waving their fingers as to come on, the teacher and her husband, you know? And we're like, oh shit, you know? So we get pulled out of there.
Damn.
And,
You know, after we get brought out into the front of the to the bar, then the waiter comes out with their drinks, like, "Oh, here's your drink," and we're like, "No, those aren't ours,
that's great."
But anyhow, so they were real cool about it. You know, nothing real bad ended up happening over that. And we had gotten, you know, somebody, one of the other students had told them where we went. Maybe it was a good thing. I don't know. Yeah, right. So anyway, so we go through that. That was pretty much like Mexico and then Mexico City. And then we went to like Taxco, which was a smaller town. That was like my favorite part. That was the most cultural part of Mexico that we went to, the pyramids. And
oh, cool.
It was really, really awesome.
Yeah.
And then after that, we went to Acapulco, which is, of course, the most tourist place that I went while I was down there.
Right.
And, okay, so we get to Acapulco. It's the last stop. And, I mean, I'm not going to put out the girl's name, but I ended up hooking up with a girl while I was down there. I mean, we got so hammer time. I ended up leaving her out on the balcony, I'm pretty sure, like, half naked. Went back to my room. It was a fucking fucked up deal. But we went. So by that point, the teachers were like, okay, you guys can go out now. You know what I'm saying? Well, let me back up for a second. Before we go out to these clubs, for the first time, I found some marijuana while I was down there. So let me tell you about that. I bought this shirt while I was down there, and I still have this shirt to this day. It is just like the most bootleg weed shirt I've ever seen in my life. And it says, "Just Say Yes, Acapulco," on the front with a joint. And then on the back, it's just like all these super fucking like cliche weed sayings. Take me to your dealer. And like a big picture of Green Day's logo. Like that's just like, you know.
This is random.
Yeah. And so I bought this shirt and I'm walking around the beach down in Acapulco. And this guy comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, you know, you smoke?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know." And he's like, "Okay, come with me." So he takes me. And this is like, if any of y'all go down here, you have either been through this or watch out for this, just so you know. So he's like, "Oh, yeah, come over here, man." So I go over, and it's like this. It's a bathing suit hut. They're selling bathing suits.
Right.
It's fucking total front, though. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He brings me in this place. And I'm fucking freaking out now. I'm 16 years old. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Holy shit,
dude!
Bro.
I almost fucked up so bad right here. But he brings me in there, and they're like bringing the stuff out. You know, but they're talking to me. I don't know, like all the language and everything else. And I'm just like, man, I'm just trying to make sure, you know, that there's no cops involved. And when I said that, holy shit, I probably almost got killed right there.
Oh wow.
You know, and then because they're like, oh, they get fucking hot, and then the dude's like, oh shit,
yeah.
So. You know, it ends up calming down. I just, you know, I'm like, I'm just freaked out. They're like, okay. So they bring out the weed, and all the weed's rolled in newspapers. And I bought an eighth of Acapulco Gold, like legit,
right,
for $80, which I'm sure they fucking ripped me the shit off. But to me, that was fucking amazing. You know what I'm saying? So I got that. And then after they're like, oh, you do coca? And I'm like, no. So I got out of there and I got my weed. So I smoke, and it was like one of the first times I smoked while I was down there. You know, I was down there for a few days by that point.
Right.
So I get real high on the balcony. No one else is smoking with me. I find a fucking pipe off some dude on the street, some vendor, you know. And I'm smoking on the balcony. I get real high and shit. And these people are like, hey, we're going to go out tonight. Do you want to go, you know, exchange some money so you can have some peso? And I was like, yeah, that's cool, you know. So we go to the bank, and I remember I'm just so blazed, and I walk up to the front, and there's just – two guards when you walk in this bank with fucking M16 standing there. And I'm like so nervous. I'm like, oh my God, white boy, don't do something. Get this place shut up, you know?
Yeah.
So I get that all done, whatnot. And we go out to this club. And so for whatever reason, and this is crazy to me too. So we all get in these fucking cabs and they take us to these hotels. It's not until later in life that I look back on that like, holy shit, these fucking cabbies could have fucking taken us out.
Anywhere,
they knew we
had
money on us.
Yeah,
that's fucking scary. So,
right.
You know, I don't think the school trips are quite like this anymore. But
right.
Anyway, so we all go out that night. And I mean, me and even like the Priss kids that went with us and everything, like we all go out to this fucking extravaganza, two-story fucking nightclub in fucking Acapulco. And it's fucking amazing. I remember whenever I first went, I was a little perturbed because they told me I couldn't dress exactly how I was dressing because I had to be a little nicer or whatnot, you know?
Right.
So I was a little pissed off about that or whatnot because it's just me back then. And I get there and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to have a good time. But eventually, you know, we calm down, kicking with these dudes, and I'm like, oh, yeah, just get me, like, 8 drinks then. I'm like, because if we're going to be here, I'm going to get wasted. And they fucking legitimately brought me fucking 8, whatever I ordered. I got pictures of me sitting there at the table, and I just started fucking drinking them. And the girl who I was hanging out with, you know, who I'd hooked up with and shit, she was talking to one of the waiters who was working there, and she told him that I had some weed and I was trying to smoke, you know. And this dude's like, oh, yeah, man, come with me. And he brought me in the back of this I mean, this nightclub is fucking gargantuan, huge baller status. But he brings me into this back room, and he fucking just opens up these 2 cabinet doors, and there's just fucking weed and bongs and joints. I mean, there's just damn, shit. And he's like, what you need, man? What you need? I was like, holy shit, I just need some papers or something. You know? And, man, I ended up getting blazed up out there, and fucking we ended up getting asked to leave the bar shortly thereafter because some of the people we were with were a little too intoxicated, right, falling right. over tables.
Bunch of 16, 17-year-olds.
Yeah, and I'm sure that shit happens all the time. They made a shitload of money off us. You sure. Know? So, yeah. You know, we all made it back safely to the hotels, and, you know, that's when I left the girl on the balcony and all this. And I really did feel like shit about that afterwards, fucking, especially as me and her still went to school together. Right. After that. So, you know, we get back. So I got this weed, right? And now we're leaving Acapulco, and we're going to go back to home, back to Illinois. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take this weed with me, of course.
Yeah.
So I stuff it in, you know, my toothpaste, my toothbrush holder. And I'm like, oh, if I got it with me on my carry-on, it doesn't matter because they're not looking through that shit, especially back then, you know?
Right.
You hope.
Right, exactly. And like I said, I'm sick. I'm fucking stupid as shit. So I'm like, okay. So I throw out my bag, and sure enough, yeah, we make it back through, and everything's fine. And we go from Acapulco to Dallas, which is probably like the biggest drug route, you know what I'm saying? So right. stupid.
Yeah, no shit, dude.
But it wasn't even until I got back to the United States, which is probably good, that I ever even fucking contemplated there could have been a dog there. I never even thought about a drug dog,
right?
So they could have smelled that. And dude, I'm with like all my classmates on this shit, so you know what I'm saying, that was, it was a crazy ass time. I ended up making it back, and it was fine. I hear that train too.
Yeah, I hear it,
but it's funny because before I had left, also I had this boy Mike from Chanel, who's a fucking idiot, but he was my worst best friend, and I had lent him my car the night before I went to Mexico.
Oh my god, dude! Oh god. Yeah.
And while I came back, it had ended up in a rock quarry, fucking submerged. They hauled it to another dude's house who was also equally shady, who stole my stereo and all that shit.
Oh,
yeah, that was a fucked up situation. My mom's like, "Where's your car?" And I'm like, "I'll tell you when I'm back from Mexico." It was so fucking stupid.
Oh wow!
But so. Fast forward to this year. I mean, all that went down. Nothing too, you know, nobody got in any trouble, but there was a lot of mayhem involved.
Sure.
It was Mexico. It was super fun.
Right.
My mom's talking to me the other, like, recently, like, within the last 2 weeks, and she's like, yeah, so, you know, this girl that I went with, who was, like, probably the prissiest of all of them, I guess she works with her now. Like, they work at the school together.
Okay.
And so she, I guess she brings this up every now and then. You know what I'm saying?
Your mom and
So she's like, and she's telling her, because I didn't know all this part. And my mom told me, she's like, I got a phone call about that. So I don't think I ever knew that after we got caught in the strip club, they did contact our parents
That's
to tell
fucked
them.
Up, dude.
Yeah, I never Nobody knew that. Yeah. So I just thought my mom didn't know really too much about that, but she did.
Oh, that's funny.
And then also, I guess, you know, whenever we were leaving the airport going back to the United States, like, the teacher's like, okay, so now if anybody has anything on them that can, you know, and I guess Mindy was telling my mom, she's like, everybody just stared at your son. So I had no fucking idea, but she was like, oh my god, your son almost got me into so much trouble. She tells her that all the time. I'm like, man, I didn't get anybody into no trouble.
That's,
you know what
fucking
saying?
Great, bro.
That's always funny when you get the thing, like, your parents knew that you didn't know they knew. Why me and my sister had one over my mom that she didn't realize had happened. When my sister was probably, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11, I'm 4 years older than her, and I had one of those guns, a Zebra that shoots like rubber pellets, yellow pellets.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of these guns, and so we thought it would be a good idea to have like a fight, you know? So my mom worked at volunteered at his haunted house for the JCs, so she was going to be gone for like a whole afternoon, you know. So we do, so we like planned it around this. My dad was hunting,
yeah.
is November or October. So my dad's hunting, my mom's, you know, doing the haunted house, and me and my sister be by ourselves. So, like, I knew this was going to happen, so I stocked up on all this ammo. And I gave my sister, like, one little pack.
Right.
And I had, like, thousands of rounds. Plus, I had, like, it was like a machine gun.
And she just had a one-shot.
The pistol. Okay. Yeah. So we set up the furniture in the living room, and it was like, okay, let's go. We're like shooting, and I'm shooting the shit out of her. She runs out of bullets like within a minute, you know.
Right.
She's like, I don't have any more bullets left. I'm like, well, there's a whole bunch of them on the floor between us. So she scales the fucking couch and jumps down like between us. Right. With all this shit set up, and I'm just pummeling this shit out of her with these pellets, and it's like, in her face. And they're like little welts.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So it fucking hurts, you know. I'm fucking nailing it. And then this went on for a good couple hours. She kept jumping in there, and I would shoot at her. So one time she jumped down there and she was running across to get away, and she ran into this like thing my mom had that went from like the floor to the ceiling, and it had plants on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But for plants. A plant stripper pole, yeah.
Sorry, and I didn't mean to talk bad about your mom out
here. It's all right. So, yeah, so she had these plants. My sister fucking slammed into this thing, knocked these fucking plants over all over the fucking living room. All of a sudden, I look at the clock, and my mom's going to be home in like 10 minutes.
God damn it.
And my mom was like a fucking clean freak, yeah, man. Like, would you get in trouble if you didn't towel the sink out,
yeah,
when you got done using the
sink?
Hands
and shit.
Yeah. So my mom was like really crazy about that stuff. So I'm like freaking out. So we had to pick up these pellets really fast, put the fucking furniture back, and then I'm putting the plants back in, but you could tell.
Dirt's missing.
There was like a lot of dirt. So I'm like, shit. So I ran out in the backyard, just dug dirt in the backyard.
Oh my God.
And put it in there. And I pulled it off. My mom never found out about it, and every once in a while she would say, you know, I was cleaning the living room and I found another one of those stupid yellow pellets. What the hell are you guys doing? And I'm like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
It was so funny. And then when we told her years later, we were laughing so hard. She's like, are you kidding me? You guys did that?
Right.
You know, because she was like, oh, they're so good while I'm gone, you know, type thing. So that's pretty funny. All right, well, we got a killer cage match to get to tonight, yeah, guys. Got a few listeners to thank once again. Chris, who do we got?
The girl Holly Joe Ziegler. We got the homie Dan Lance and old girl Stephanie Ruskinoff. So thank you all once again for them numbers, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, that's always very good. Always very good. And Joey, we talked about this in the intro, but who do we got fighting to death in a fucking steel cage tonight?
Mr. Glass Eye, Henry Lee Lucas.
Glass Eye.
Oh, for her, aren't they, really? But yeah, Henry Lee is taking on Vlad the Impaler.
Oh my God. God
damn it, dude.
Wow. He doesn't have Otis with him either.
No, he doesn't.
Just Henry.
I don't think Otis would help.
No, I don't think so either. But tonight, CK, they got a couple of objects they're fighting with. What do they got?
They got a mop soaked in puke, an electric belt sander with power, and the variable is Bill Clinton after an 8-ball of coke.
Oh, damn, yeah. That's a fucking variable right there.
Wow.
Holy shit.
What do you guys think? I mean, obviously, from a physical standpoint, Henry Lee doesn't stand a chance.
No.
But
I'll make it simple.
What's that?
Okay. Vlad the Impaler is just going to take the fucking mop soaked puke. He's going to take out Bill Clinton first because he's going to get sick of him fucking chit-chatting while he's high.
Hey, man, how's it going, dude? What's up, man? Yeah.
So he's just going to impale him up the ass.
Okay.
Then he's just going to impale fucking Henry Lee Lucas, and that's it. It's done.
So the belt sander, Joey's the belt sander coming into play here at all?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of agree with CK. I think that Vlad is just going to go on a fucking power trip and just fucking start impaling with that mop, but... That if Henry Lee is going to have any chance, it's going to be with that belt, Sanders. So if he gets a hold of it, if fucking Bill Clinton starts talking fucking Henry or Vlad Jr. off enough where he's not paying attention, him, yeah, come up behind him and fucking.
Yeah, I don't know. Henry is a resourceful motherfucker, but I don't know, man. Chris, what do you think, dude?
Oh, I'm totally about Vlad fucking taking the fucking mop and just like
impaling the both of them. Yeah.
He's going to go through fucking goddamn Henry right through the missing eye anyway.
Right.
Damn, dude. Like,
so Bill Clinton, a non-issue with you?
Bill Clinton, I mean, maybe he's got that fucking cocaine power. You never know. But
I don't know.
He's probably too busy fucking like trying to get another eight ball and a fucking blowjob.
Possible. Henry might be down with that too.
See, they're all working on a deal because you know Henry wants to do some dope too.
I feel like Bill's just happy to be hanging around with those two way more than his wife. Probably.
So yeah, always a good killer cage match. It's definitely a fun matchup there. And so the listeners, of course, provide the random numbers. We came up with a list of 70 objects and 70 killers. And thanks to our listeners, they come together in funny ways, and we threw a variable in there. Got some new variables I put together.
I see that.
All right, a little update on my writing of Creation of Chaos 3. I've got so far complete, edited, done, in the final bin, The Creep, The Last Supper, and The 666 Express.
Finalized.
And The Eyes Have It is the next one I'm working on. It's the one I've been telling you about that I'm taking The Telltale Heart by Poe and twisting it up and throwing in a real serial killer in there, the Charles Albright, the eyeball killer, tweaked to be kind of a cross between him and Gacy, doing some devious shit. And I think everybody's going to dig it. It's definitely different. I've never done anything like this before. And then I'm going to do the Lovecraft story, The Thing on the Doorstep. Oh, yeah. And I've got some other original stuff as well. So a lot of things cooking with the writing. And the Facebook Live I did went really well.
Right.
So I'm going to do another one here in another week or two.
Yeah, it came out good.
Thanks.
That was really good.
Yeah, it was fun. It was like a half hour and got a lot of really good questions and got some good involvement from readers that were interested. So I'll keep you posted since I know some of the readers are also listeners on here and vice versa. So that's cool. Always good to cross-promote. So, all right. Well, guys, I think we've done plenty of mayhem tonight. Hell so yeah. About time chaotic. To hit the outro. Fuck yeah, man. That hell brand new Armored Saint. Love that fucking stuff. Good stuff to listen to. Kind of a palate cleanse between different things. But Armored Saint is just such an old school band.
Oh,
it's cool to see they're still at it.
One of my favorites of all time. I love that.
They're amazing. So that song, of course, Standing on the Shoulders of Giants off the new one. CK, you said you got it. I'm sporting the shirt tonight, so we're trying to support that metal underground as much as possible. And CK, after I heard that Benediction album, I went and bought a shirt, so I'm supporting it.
CK with the albums and you with the fucking merch.
I've been good, though. I have not bought. Up until here recently, I'd gone a good couple, 3 months without buying a shirt.
Right. I can't say the same.
Now, Joey, you had a joke that you were telling us on break that's pretty fucking funny.
I ran across this meme. It's so fucking stupid, but I was dying laughing. My buddy's like, if your goth girlfriend cuddles you from behind, she's not the big spoon. She's your ladle of filth. Yeah, I was like, okay, all right. I can get on board
with
that.
Sounds like a typo song.
It does. Right? Oh, my God.
So some of those memes are pretty goddamn funny. All right, so tonight, bumper music by Ghost, Benediction, and Armored Saint. Chris, who's CK's fucking intro music by?
Christix motherfuckers, what's up?
That's right. And CK, who does the Murder Metal Mayhem intro?
Low motherfucking 12, bitches.
Hell yeah. And Joey, 666, fucking 6, coming to us from who?
Motherfucking Onslaught from across the pond.
That's right. That's right.
Cheerio.
And go check out spellboundeffectsandart.com if anything, Chris, to go look at that fucking thing we were talking about.
That thing was sick.
God damn, it's so gnarly.
Yeah, baby's head on like this mechanical spider body. It's fucking insane. Tony Campagna just cranking it out. spellboundeffectsandart.com. Great online catalog you can order from, but he sends the shit out quick. He knows how to ship, too. They're packed very well. And if he knows you, he puts fucked up names on the return address, which I love.
Hell yeah.
The first time he sent me something was from Harry Feltersnatch. So, yeah, that was great. So, all right, Chris, we got a few listeners here. We appreciate them all, and we got a few good comments.
Number one right here, we got Mr. Bob Edwards says, what else can you say? Fucking Slayer!
I guess you like the episode on Slayer.
He must have. He must have.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man.
Joe, which is cool. Another good one.
Randy Evans 911 commented, the Yuba County 5 episode was great. One of my favorites so far.
Awesome. We had a couple of people. Justin Morris said it was one of his favorites.
Hell yeah. That's
awesome. Like lost in questions still, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Randy. It's such a fucked up story.
Right. It is. Yeah. It's a really weird story. And CK, you always tell us you'd like to hear them after the fact. So what did you think of that one with the...
It was awesome. It's just... It sounds like a fucking movie.
Yeah, it's for sure. So weird.
It
so
sounds like a movie. It's like this. It kind of reminded me of what was that movie like in the '90s?
Alive.
No, the one. God, my fucking brain is gone. The one where they get lost in the woods and.
Shit, I don't know, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of Blair Witch like that.
Blair Witch, yeah.
Okay. Oh, all right.
That's what it kind of reminded me
of. Yeah, it's an interesting story, and we referenced that Dyatlov Pass, which I'm sure we'll do eventually, because that's cool another weird one. So, CK, we got a good comment there.
Metal up your arse. Keep up the fight, CK. You fucking rule, bro. I don't know what to say, because stuff like this, that's the stuff that keeps me going. So I appreciate everybody who's behind me. And
yeah.
Supports me, and I actually have a tear in my eye at this point. So, damn, bro, I don't want to start bawling.
No, it's all good.
Thanks.
Awesome, man. This is a good one here. 12 head 666. I got to assume this motherfucker's into low 12 because he said, "Gotta say that low 12 episode about Gacy is the best one you all did. Love the show, and good to hear Pete's still doing shit." So, thank you very much. That was nice of you to say that. And glad you dig that episode. It was a good one. It's like our fourth most listened to episode. So apparently a lot of people agree with that. So that's awesome. All right. So don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com. Listen to all those episodes, except, of course, those special ones we do
for the 666 Club.
Yeah, you got to join the club. We talk about that all the time on Patreon, patreon.com/MurderMetalMayhem. Join the 666 Club. You can also, though, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Check out the show anywhere, man. We're all over the place now. Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, iTunes, Alexa, and more. So I haven't tried it on Alexa yet, but I do want to see if that'll work. Because that'd be kind of neat. And I'm guessing if we're on Amazon Music, we'd probably be there. So, and, you know, when you go on these places and listen, if you can leave a comment, it really helps move our rating up the food chain, and then more people can hear about us. If we get higher up in the rankings, then more people get exposed to listening.
Right, they get more notifications about, hey, check this out. This might be something you're interested in. And
yeah, we end up on a list of top trending podcasts, and a lot more people are going to hear about it. So we appreciate that. You can go to PeteAltieri.com if you want to pick up one of my books and follow what I'm doing in the writing stuff. Don't miss our bonus episode next week on Joey's fucking Heart of Illinois show.
Hell yeah.
And put it on the schedule next Saturday, October Halloween 31st.
Night. Halloween.
When this episode comes out, it's be just over a week away. So you definitely don't want to miss it at the Horseshoe Saloon there in Forest, Illinois. Forest with two R's.
Yes.
Yes.
Double R.
You'll hear all about it, the band's playing and all that when we do that bonus episode. So don't miss it. Well, we can't let him go without hearing a karaoke song, but with everything we had going on this weekend, I did not get a chance to do the song I was going to do, which was Raining Men for Paul Bateson. But I came close with this gem from the past. So crank it the fuck up. And until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And keep your fist reaching in the cooler for another fucking beer.
Yeah.
If I listen to your lies, would you say I'm a man without conviction? I'm a man who doesn't know how to sell a contradiction. You come and go, you come and go. Come and come and come and come and come and come chameleon. You come and go, you come and go. Love would be easy if your colors are like my dreams. Red, gold, and green. Red, gold, and green. Did you hear your words every day? Yeah, you used to be so sweet, I heard you say that my love was an addiction. When we cling, our love is strong. When you go, you're gone forever. You string along. Come and come and come and come and come and chameleon. You come and go, you come and go. Love of the easy if your colors are like my dreams. Red, gold, and green. Red, gold, and green. Every day is like survival. You're my lover, not my rival. Every day is like survival. You're my lover, not my rival. I'm a man without conviction. I'm a man who doesn't know how to sell a contradiction. You come and go, you come and go. Come and come and come and come and come and come and chameleon. You come and go, you come and go. Love will be easy if your colors are like my dreams. Red, gold, and green. Red, gold, and green. Come and come and come and come and come and come and chameleon. You come and go, you come and go. Loving would be easy if your colors were like my dreams. Red, gold, and green. Red, gold, and green. Come and come and come and come and come and chameleon. You come.